Good afternoon. I would like to thank the organizers for the chance to be here, and you for being here as well. And what I will try to do in the next half hour is to go over some issues that we have been encountering with respect to the development of coarse-grained models for a class of materials, oligomer-grafted silicon nanoparticles. And this is the work of my PhD student, Bingbing Hong, and my postdoc, Alex Kremos, at Princeton. Why are these materials important, and in which ways are they significantly different from the systems that we have been looking at until now? First of all, what are these nanoscale ionic and organic hybrid materials? These are classes of materials that have been developed over the years. My primary experimental contact for these systems are the groups of Lyndon Archer and Emmanuel Giannelis at Cornell. And what they have been making is solvent-free particle systems functionalized with either covalent grafted short organosilane chains, and the long chain part is PEG, polyethylene glycol, or PO, or through ionic grafting, they create a number of ionic groups with a very short tether to the silica particles, and then they ion exchange in solution the ions to be primary or tertiary amines, and they remove effectively all the solvent. These are very viscous liquids. You can see a picture of a tube, lab tubes, containing one of them, and if you use the scale bar here is 200 nanometers, so you can really see that these are nanoparticle-based. The nanoparticles are dispersed. It's not all agglomerated, and the typical size of the nanoparticles is between 5 and 20 nanometers each particle. The chains are 20 or 30 methyl groups long. And the kinds of properties we're looking at are very different than the properties of interest for biomolecular simulations or for crystal polyamorphic transitions. In the biomolecular simulations or the crystal transitions, there is an event that takes place. It may take place over very long times, and you want to see the state before and after. So, you know, temperature accelerate, the system will eventually cross the barrier, get to the new state. Here, what we're interested in is questions such as, you know, what is the viscosity of these systems, and how does it change when you functionalize it in a different way? You change the grafting density, or you change the chain length or the diameter of the particles. The viscosity is a transport property. We can get it from equilibrium or non-equilibrium molecular dynamics simulations, but to get it properly, we need to sample times that are relevant to the relaxation of all the major modes in the system, which can be quite long. And the same way for the ionic version of these models, we need to ask questions such as, what is the ionic conductivity of this? These are used sometimes for fuel cell or battery applications. We want to use them. What is the conductivity and what controls it? What's the mechanism for conductivity? You need very long time scales for that because these are long, big systems. So how do we deal with systems like that? Clearly, coarse graining is an immediate possibility, and we have been working on that for a number of years now, with some successes and some issues still remaining unresolved. What I will do in the first part of the talk is talk about the simpler version, the non-ionic systems that just contain the particles and the chains with them. So how do we make a coarse-grained model of particles and PEG chains? Well, we start by figuring out how to make a coarse-grained model for the PO chains, polyethylene oxide chains. This is the chemical formula, with N being the number of repeat units in the system. For example, this is the N equals 2. We start with a near atomistic reference, not explicit hydrogen, but rather united atom version of this model. There are good potentials for these systems based on a modified transferable potential for phase equilibria trapi model that contains fairly standard features for bond, angle, dihedral potentials, and the non-bonded interactions that are Lennard-Jones plus Coulombic interactions from the partial charges on the oxygen atoms. So very standard. We take these models, and we know that these near-atomistic models predict the transport properties very well. So we did a series of calculations pushing the envelope in terms of how long these chains can be and still reliably obtain the transport properties through long molecular dynamics calculations. This is the viscosity, this is the chain length n. The dark points are the simulations, the open points are the experiments. We have good agreement. We also did a calculation of the diffusivities, and we really cannot go much beyond 12, because beyond that, the time scales associated to these viscosities and these diffusion coefficients become too long to realistically sample with molecular dynamics calculations. So we have a decent model for the that an atomistic reference basis for the chains. So let's coarse grain that and get a coarse grained model that preserves as many of the characteristics of interest to us for this model. Now, we are relatively new in the coarse graining business, and we are not very sophisticated, so we use, you know, a very simple, not rigorously based, as, for example, the multi-scale coarse graining approach that many of you have been developing, that just looks at preserving the structure. But I do not think that the conclusions I will draw significantly depend on this particular feature, on the precise method we use to get the coarse graining. Coarse graining will be taking the model, deciding what is the coarse graining level. In this particular case, we decided that two of these units would correspond to one coarse grain bead, and we do iterative Boltzmann inversion and get very good agreement between for the bead potential. Okay? We also need to worry about the structure of these chains. The persistence length of PO chains is about 3.2 repeat units, so it's comparable in length to the size of our coarse grain beads. It means that the coarse grain potential must have multibody forces. Effectively, we can make those to be harmonic bond potentials to match the mean distance as it between the two coarse grained center of mass, and also an angle potential, which we map based on making sure that the end-to-end distance of these chains is correct in the coarse-grained model as a function of chain length, as it is for the atomistic model. So how well do we do for that? Well, this diagram on the left shows you the end-to-end distance as a function of the number of coarse-grained beads from the atomistic in color and for the coarse-grained simulations at two different temperatures, 303 and 500 Kelvin, in the melt. So you can see that is captured very, very well. So the overall dimensions of the chains are captured well, and also the structure of the atomistic in red and coarse-grained in black. Bead-bead correlation functions, actually center, this is the chain-chain, center of mass, chain-chain correlation functions map very nicely. And what is more important is that we need to be able to do these potentials and have some reasonable faith that they can be transferred to different systems, because the whole point of doing this exercise is to understand the dependence of properties on the architecture and chain length of the grafted chains and so on. So we need to be able to have a coarse grain potential that has some transferability to different chain lengths, to different temperatures, to different systems. So we use the exact same potentials, of course, in order to test that, and we find that the transferability with respect to the chain length is fairly decent, and with respect to temperature is also fairly decent. So what we've done thus far is established that we can develop, through not very sophisticated coarse graining algorithms, potentials that do very well for the chains on their own. Now the question is, how do these potentials do in terms of the dynamic properties, in terms, say, of the diffusivities of the chains? And there you start having some issues. The diagram shows the diffusivity in centimeters squared per second as a function of the number of coarse-grained beads from 1 to 10. My student insists on using an exponent here. I've asked her to do 1 and 10 and didn't catch this slide. The atomistic calculations are here at low temperature, 303 Kelvin, and high temperature, 500 Kelvin. You can see that the exponent is different at low temperatures and high temperatures. The coarse-grained model is up here. This is the low temperature, this is the high temperature. The exponent is much closer to the high temperature exponent of around 1.3. for the coarse-grained model. And what that means is that for the room temperature mapping, if you wish, if you wanted to say, is there a constant factor by which the dynamics are accelerated in the coarse-grained model relative to the atomistic model? The answer is no. At low temperatures, that factor is very different, depends strongly on chain length. At the high temperatures, it doesn't. Okay, so we can live with that up to a certain degree, understanding that those dynamic scaling factors will be temperature dependent. Now, we come to the really difficult part, which is to try to incorporate the nanoparticles in that. The atomistic, we really don't have an atomistic version of the model because that the nanoparticles typically contain too many atoms to allow for good atomistic long time simulations. So even in the quote atomistic simulations, we integrate the potential of interaction between two nanoparticles by considering just a center-center, a one-center approximation for that. This is a fairly standard approach on how to do that. We just do the integrals, and we find potentials between nanoparticles and between nanoparticles and beads of chains that, of course, are much steeper and much deeper and much narrower than the potentials between beads. So this is, for reference, this would be the Lennard-Jones potential acting between two beads, two methylene groups, two methyl groups, and the corresponding potential between one nanometer particle and the same group is here. You can really distinguish between the two. The two nanometer particle acts more attractive, has a more attractive potential. Note that the normalization here with the diameter is very different for the particles relative to the groups. Okay. So we have that, we have this semi-atomistic model that contains a one-center particle with atomistically described chains, and we can measure with significant effort and only at high temperatures the viscosity of melts of these systems. Okay? So we do that, and we can do it as a function of systems of particle size. The brown points here are with small particles, the red and blue points are with larger particles and with different chain lengths. Of course, we don't have direct experimental data to compare at these temperatures because they cannot measure at these temperatures. We have at room temperature, and for the couple of cases where we can make simulations for small particles with 12 mers, and these are these points here, the field squares, they tend to be on the extrapolation of the experimental measurements for corresponding systems. These are other systems over here. So we have some reasonable faith that the atomistic chains with the nanoparticles give us viscosities and transport properties in the correct range as seen by the experiments. But we want to go beyond that, and we want to be able to combine now our nanoparticle models with our coarse-grained models and be able to explore lower temperatures or longer timescales. So how do we do that? Again, we need to go through a process of coarse-graining. Coarse-graining the core bead interactions. So these are the nanoparticles. These are the beads of the chains that we coarse-grained previously. And we do inverse iterative Boltzmann inversion to find the effective potential between particles and beads. And then we come to the issues. Namely that we find, we were naive at the beginning, we said, you know, this is already coarse-grained, we don't need to adjust it, but it turns out we do need to adjust it. In other words, the quote atomistic one-center potential in a system with a particle with seven bead chains, which is this red line here, is very different, the effective potential, when you coarse-grain it, when you use a coarse-grained system of nanoparticles and coarse-grained chains than when you use a system with a nanoparticle with the atomistic chains. In other words, and of course this is to be expected, but it wasn't expected at least to us to this extent, you can start coarse-graining different parts of the system and combine different levels of representation in an arbitrary fashion. You have to get the potentials that are appropriate for the specific combination of the system that you have. We find that these corrected core-core interactions, the atomistic is this red line, and the corrected or coarse-grained is this black line. And the degree of correction, the how much they differ, depends strongly on how many attached beads you have on these nanoparticles. Okay. So we find that the coarse-grained model will have a stronger dependence than what we like on the specific architecture of the nanoparticle chain system that we're looking at. And even more interestingly, we find that what we normally expect, and what we normally expect, of course, is that when you coarse-grain the system, you accelerate the dynamics. So the chains have a diffusivity down here when they're atomistic, and their diffusivity moves up by a factor of between 10 and 100 when you coarse-grain the beads. But for the combined nanoparticle plus bead systems, what you find is that the dynamics, this is the mean square displacement versus time in nanoseconds, for the atomistic red lines, this slope equals to one is accomplished only, as you can see, at very long times, at hundreds of nanoseconds. And that mean square displacement for the atomistic system in for short attached chains is actually faster than the coarse-grained model, both for the corrected version of the model and the uncorrected version of the model. This is no longer true for the seven beads. The corrected version of the model is actually faster than the atomistic, but the uncorrected version is slower than either one of them. How do we understand that? And we had some discussion last year in Lugano when I first talked about these early results I had there. And at the time, we were not quite sure. We didn't have the corrected results, and we were not quite sure how to explain the unexpected dynamics or the counterintuitive core dynamics. It turns out that these systems are, the experimental systems have sometimes counterintuitive behavior. For example, in a polymer system, you increase the chain length, you slow the dynamics. The viscosity goes up, the diffusivity goes down. In these systems, you take the nanoparticles, you increase the chain length of the attached, and sometimes the system will become less viscous and more diffusive. And the reason for that is that you have, these are not pure polymer systems. These are between colloids and polymers. And if sometimes increasing the chain length will make the colloidal particles more diffusive because it reduces the barrier to motion due to the other nanoparticles. We can quantify that and test various properties. For example, the chain dynamics, these are the atomistic correlation function, end-to-end correlation functions, and they decay over this time scale in picoseconds. The coarse-grained versions decay much faster. So the chains move a lot more quickly. There is no problem with the dynamics of the chains. The chain extensions, the chain dimensions, are the same in the atomistic and the coarse-grained model. The grafting topology does influence the short-range particle-particle interactions or structure, as we have seen before, and we do have differences resulting from the fact that the coarse-grained beads are much bigger than the atomistic, so you have issues when the two particles are near each other where a coarse-grained chain will not fit in the gap, but the atomistic chains will fit in the gap and will lead to different structure. But I think the simplest explanation that we can give in terms of why it is that we have these strange dynamics is to look at cage escape dynamics, and I just picked a couple of papers from the recent literature, some of them by people who are in the audience, obtaining a boost factor or acceleration factor for the dynamics resulting from the difference between the coarse-grained potential and the atomistic potential. Essentially, the coarse-grained potential is softer, it allows for faster cage escape, it allows for faster dynamics. And that is the normal behavior that you expect here, shown schematically. This is the atomistic, this is the coarse-grained. You get the particle in the middle to escape the cage more quickly when you have softer potentials. But it turns out that in our case, for when you look at the integrand for this acceleration factor, you find that the uncorrected version of the model has acceleration for the distances that correspond to the first shell of neighbors. But at longer distances, the particles actually are obstructed. They move slower. And when you correct it, that longer distance deceleration becomes less severe, and that explains why the corrected version is always faster than the uncorrected version. So to summarize the situation thus far, what we have seen is that getting transport properties that are transferable through coarse graining is still very much, to us at least, an open issue, and one that we would very much like to see some progress on. Does it mean that that coarse graining cannot teach us very much about the systems? No. And in the second, or the last third of my talk, I want to very quickly describe certain qualitative and very nice results that we have obtained for the same systems, again using coarse grain models at a very, very simple level, but that really gives some insights that on the dynamics of the systems. So we now switch to the harder ionic version of these models. Even though I'm presenting it second, this is actually work we did a little, we started ahead, because the ionic version of the models, of the systems, were of higher interest to our experimental colleagues than the non-ionic versions. So we said, okay, let's try to do the hard systems first. How do we do the hard systems? Well, we are trying to describe systems that contain the nanoparticle cores. They have attached ionic sides, negatively charged, and they have counter ions in solution or in the melt. There is no solvent, remember. There's no solution, just melt. Of chains that are primary amines, positively charged at one end, or tertiary amines with the three shorter chains emanating from the positive ion. And there is a slight difference in the architecture. Here there are tethers, there are short tethers for the stars, and there are no tethers for the linear version of the chains. These correspond to different generations of the synthesis methods that people have been using at Cornell. Again, we started this early, as I said, so to get the parameters for the coarse grain, these are all coarse grain models. We use freely jointed chains, so no potentials. How do we get the bead parameters? Well, a very quick and a poor man's coarse graining method involves just matching thermodynamic properties. So we can get at least an estimate of what is the potential well depth and size of these coarse grain beads by looking at the group we want to represent. We had used the shorter group, just CH3O, CH3. We know the critical temperature and density for this molecule, and then we can calculate the Lehner-Jones parameter very simply by just multiplication, right? The other main, so these are the parameters existing between the beads. The other main interaction present in the system is electrostatics. And electrostatic interactions, if you use the relative permittivity, the dielectric constant of SiO2 and PEG chains, you find that this dielectric, the relative permittivity is around 4, which gives, for a reasonable size of these systems, the Coulombic interaction is about 35 kT at room temperature. So when I first looked at this model, I said, you know, we really shouldn't even simulate a system that has a bond here that can break, because 35 kT bond does not break at room temperature. That turned out to be incorrect. And why it turned out to be incorrect is going to be shown in a short time, but if I may, let me just illustrate that these systems, of course, have very complex structures. So if you look at the, now it's all coarse-grained, the core-core correlation functions for the non-ionic version of the models is green here. This fine structure is not noise. It's due to the fact that you have the effect of packing of these small beads around the large beads that gives rise to this structure. The ionic stars, this model, resemble in many ways the monionic version of the model, but they have lost this fine structure because ionic interactions influence that. And then the linear version of the models, these, because they can, the chains, you have a very strong correlation between cores, because these are small, the ions, the chains can get away. So two cores can approach each other and be connected through a negative, positive, negative ion chain. So these sharp peaks are like charge correlations coming from the very strong Coulombic interactions between a positive and negative and a positive ion. Okay, so these are very complex systems. What do the dynamics look like? So I'm just taking a very small part of my system, making all the chains invisible, and just showing you the blue ions. These are these negative tethered ions on the cores, and the red counter ions. These are these just tracing the cores of the tertiary, I mean the positive ions. And letting it go, this is about over about 100 picoseconds, 100 nanoseconds, I'm sorry, not picoseconds, nanoseconds. And what you see is, first of all, the ions are strongly associated, as expected, 35 kT. They form chains, but also they can easily escape association with one nanoparticle and start being associated with different nanoparticles. Why is that? That's because there is a mechanism through which, just the same way that you see on the surface of a particle, a positive ion, a negative ion, becomes associated with two different positive ions, and then the neighbors exchange, you have the exact same mechanism that makes the positive ions mobile to different nanoparticles. So that picture was actually quite a bit of an insight. It wasn't obvious at all that you could have that, and we actually find that the dynamics have a lot of complications. For example, this is mean square displacements versus time. Again, look at the time scale. This is time in nanoseconds. We have to go to hundreds of nanoseconds in order to be able to reach diffusive behavior for these systems. And there are very interesting differences between the linear and star. Actually, there are no differences for the core motion, but there are differences in the chain motions, with the chains of the stars being slower at short times, but faster at long times. And this is the non-ionic version core motion. So we are in the process of trying to analyze this quantitatively. We're looking at the dynamics of the canopy chain exchange, which is measurable experimentally through NMR. We label half the chains on the nanoparticles and then look, as a function of time, what fraction of chains around the nanoparticle are colored a certain color. And through that, we can investigate the effects of temperature. This is the fraction of chains of a certain color present on the surface of a nanoparticle. This goes down with time, and the rate constant decreases fast with temperature. The association increases with chain length. In other words, the system becomes less conductive, and also with crafting density. I should point out also, before I finish, that the values of the viscosity that we calculate through Stokes-Einstein and these diffusivities are within a factor of 10 from the experimental values. They are about 0.1 Pascal seconds and 1 Pascal seconds for the norms and means, respectively. These are, of course, very high viscosity values and very difficult to get through atomistic simulations. The conductivities that we measure are also not too bad. So through these calculations, we can calculate the quantity related to the conductivity of the ions through this expression, and we find that the simulated conductivity is within a factor of 3 of the value that they obtain for corresponding systems. So let me just summarize a few of the topics I covered here. For the bulk polyethylene oxide chains, we find that coarse graining works fairly well. We get structural properties in very good agreement with the atomistic models. We get diffusion coefficients that do not scale simply with chain length and temperature, but that we understand how this scaling takes place. For the non-ionic version of the model, we still are struggling with the transferability of our coarse-grained force fields with respect to the transport properties. We find that diffusion of the particles of the cores can be slower in coarse-grained models, and that is really something we don't like, we don't want. And for the ionic version, we find that our coarse-grained, very simple models still shed light on the mechanisms for conductivity and fluidity, and we find that at least if we're interested in a factor of 10 agreement for the transport properties, we should be able to be okay with that. And this is the open question that I hope this audience can help me get some feeling for. Thank you. I'll be happy to answer questions. And I'm on time, I hope.
Almost.
So I have two things to mention. One is in terms of the ionic system, we've done some simulations of ionomers, so no nanoparticles,
right,
with a dielectric constant of 4, and basically seeing the same sort of thing.
Right. That mechanism is there for all these systems, yeah.
And then the other comment, because I don't think Gary's here, so I'll be Gary for a second. So in atomistic simulations, for the bulk PEO on a random particle, it tends to be fairly uniform and uniform coating.
Yes.
So the coarse-grained models work pretty well. But as you shift, say if you have alkane chains or something like that, and I'm wondering really for the ionic system in particular, then the way the grafting density is, and you can now start to get packing now with very short systems, it may be yet another thing, but you can now get packing of the grafting chains
on
the nanoparticles.
Correct.
So now it's a very
you have a whole different set of problems. Exactly. I think you're making very good points. I completely agree, both on the mechanism of conductivity that is present in many other systems, in ionomers for sure, and that if you have a lot of structure on the nanoparticle surfaces, or a lot of inhomogeneity on the nanoparticle surfaces, then you'll have additional issues with the coarse graining. Yes.
So since you did systematic coarse graining as far as the construction of the Hamiltonian is concerned, that gives you the right to try to predict thermodynamic equilibrium properties of the system.
Correct, but no transport.
Well, but unless you go ahead and systematically also coarse grain the equations of motions as far as every dynamical behavior is concerned, wouldn't you just say, you're basically in the spectator seat and you just see what happens.
Correct.
You can predict, or what's the philosophy behind?
My understanding is that I don't really know that there are systematic and good methods for the systems of the complexity that we are dealing with to get that systematic coarse graining in time that you were describing for with different parts of the system being significantly different in length and scale and in character. So, yeah, I agree. I have no right to expect that the results are going to come out correct.
There does exist a systematic framework within which to ask these questions, but I'm not sure whether it's, of course,
it's not. It's not. I don't think that applying that to systems of this complexity is something that I know how to do, and I think that has been tried before.
Yeah, I want to come back to the same question. In the beginning, you showed this time scaling for the little PEO chains at different temperatures.
Correct.
So that that the slope as a function of temperature for these very short chains is different in the coarse grain and all atom region is not at all surprising, because you still are in a regime where you do not have a well-developed chain-like structure. So if you have, our experience says if you have systems like this and are in a region where the dynamics is dominated by the packing of the beads and the chain structure,
you're not in the scaling regime.
Then you get the same temperature behavior. You get a Fugle-Fulcher behavior which matches exactly, but not for these very short units which you have there.
Correct.
So
but then again, my length here is dictated by the experimental systems, which are of this length.
But that means on that level, to compare that, probably your coarse graining is too coarse. You should go to a finer unit. And then maybe it would be a little better, but I don't know. But coming back to the last point, I find it's not at all surprising that this kind of time mapping doesn't work for your nanoparticle system with the chains. So what you have is you have two characteristic modes of motion, so to speak.
Right.
One is the fluctuations of the chains, and the other one is the motion of your nanoparticles.
Right.
And there's no reason, at least a priori, no reason whatsoever, that the time scaling for these two ones is the same.
Correct.
So we did, for instance, we looked at ethyl benzene in polystyrene, and it turned out that the scaling as a function of temperature, for instance, for the ethyl benzene and the polystyrene matrix were different.
Right.
One could understand how different and why in that case, but this was a special case.
Correct.
So this, I think this is one of the really major problems we have in the field, namely that we know how length scales are mapped from fine grain to coarse grain and so on, but there's no way so far to do this systematically within these schemes for the time scalings. And when you then have, let's say, competing modes for structure formation, your coarse grain system maybe even lead you into a completely wrong direction, just because you have a winning mode, which on the atomistic level, so to speak, realistic level, would not win compared to the
Absolutely,
other.
I completely agree.
This is
agree.
One of the key questions in the whole game.
I completely agree.
Yeah, on the same issue that Kurt mentioned on coupling of modes, shouldn't you first look at one large particle in a sea of your small coarse grain particles and see how the modes of the melt that you're talking about, that you sort of study, coupled to the mobility of the particle, because the mobility of the particle becomes complex, and then you'll be able to rescale that?
First of all, we did look at one particle in a sea of coarse grain particles in deriving the particle bead potentials. But the problem of the transport, the motion of the nanoparticle in a solvent, which is what you're discussing, right? You are suggesting a solvent of small beads, is a little different than the problem that we're having.
I'm not talking about small beads, because in case of small beads, you killed all the modes.
In coarse grain beads?
Coarse grain beads don't have those modes.
Right.
You need to have
Correct.
Big particle moving in a sea of small chains. And you want to see how dynamics of those different modes of those chains.
But we already know that the motion of a particle in a sea, in a solvent, essentially, is quite different than the motion of the particles, because these particles actually carry their own solvent on their backs, if you wish. So the we have, in a different study, one I'm not showing, demonstrated quite convincingly that the properties of these particles, when the chains are grafted, are very different than the transport, the dynamics, than the properties of the same particles in a sea of ungrafted chains. First of all, you have that the particle-particle interactions are very different. The structure of the system is very different. So SiO2 will very strongly associate and form agglomerates if you don't have the grafted chains. So maybe I'm not quite understanding what you're suggesting, but I thought you were suggesting to look at the particles in a solvent.
I'm talking about single particle
right.
in a solvent of polymers and
right.
learning how the time scales of the matrix couple to the non-trivial diffusion. It's not going to be non-trivial
of the single particle
of different modes of the particle, and then you'll be able to see how to scale properly times.
But what I'm trying to say is that for the problem that we're looking at, the important quantity to look at will not be to look at a single particle, but because the motion of these particles is very strongly influenced, the volume fraction of particles in the system is not small. So the motion of the particles is impeded by the existence of cages of the other particles. And so the looking at just the particle, a single particle in a solvent, would not give me those modes, the escape, the cage escape from the particles. So that is what makes this problem particularly difficult.
So that raises the issue, how sensitive are these systems to small changes in things like polydispersity? Because I have to be changed.
Right. They would be some, again, there is some sensitivity for sure to the existence of free chains. Free chains will do all sorts of things because they will significantly alter the dynamics of the medium in which these systems are moving. And there is, it turns out that detecting, because these are grafted, I mean, the way they are made, they are synthesized, it turns out it's quite difficult experimentally to determine whether there are any free chains left in the system or not. So when I'm doing comparisons with the experimental systems, unfortunately, the experimental systems are not 100% fully determined. But yes, absolutely, the free chains will influence the dynamics very strongly. And we have not done studies in which we have ungrafted chains present to look at their effects. And it would be interesting to do that.
So what's grafting?
The grafting density is around 2 chains per nanometer square.
By the way, in your conductivity, you said you came within an order of magnitude. In which direction?
The conductivity was too high. Our conductivity was too high. Our coarse grain conductivity was too high relative to the experimental, which is good in a way. That's what you expect.
Mark, any questions?
I was going to make an announcement if there's no more questions. Are there any? And that's just that if anyone else brought posters, you can just put them up wherever and people can gather and look at them at any time. And I guess the other thing is on Wednesday afternoon, we have a free afternoon. There's a variety of things that could be organized, but there's no sort of single event planned. So if anyone has any wants ideas or wants to create a sign-up list for a particular activity like whale watching or wine tasting, then that can be done, but just speak to one of us. So I guess we have a break.
Yeah, we have a break, and let's thank Professor Pangiatopoulos. Everybody back at 4:00.